Time to call a bluff or two in Chicago. We'll get to Packers Bears in just a second here on Bet Sweats. Chris Mack alongside Kate Constable. An hour from now, we take a dive into some primetime games, including one where I think the line is just totally blown off kilter due to recency bias. In 20 minutes, the NFC South, somebody has to win it, right? Time to embrace the suck with the 1 o'clock window on Sunday afternoon. And Buccaneers Panthers is a big part of that. But with an opportunity to clinch a playoff berth on the line at Soldier Field tomorrow night, Kate, for both the Packers and the Bears, pending whatever happens with the Lions against the Steelers on Sunday afternoon, and we'll get to that game in 40 minutes. But it's an opportunity for each of these teams, if they were able to get a Lions loss, like I said, to clinch a playoff berth with a win tomorrow night. Primetime game on a Saturday at Soldier Field. Conversely, at least in the Bears' case, a loss could really hurt playoff chances. The Bears would drop down to about a 50-50 probability to make the playoffs if they lose to the Packers, as they just did 2 weeks ago, 28-21. That one, though, was at Lambeau Field, Kate, and there was a guy named Micah Parsons playing in that game. Before we get to the question of whether either one of these teams can compete with the Seahawks and Rams, which will be our through thread, our through line through today's show after last night's amazing overtime game, I'm going to say this. Some bluffs need to be called in Chicago, and what I mean by that is, one, go ahead, move to Hammond, Indiana. Be our guests. Go ahead. And two, more importantly, as it relates to this game specifically tomorrow night, if I'm the Packers, I say, yeah, go ahead. Caleb Williams, beat us. Let's see if you can do it, kid. I would sell out to stop the run. I would do everything I can to bottle up Swift and Menungai, and then I would make Caleb Williams beat me because I don't think he can.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Shots fired, Chris. Shots fired. I think the Bears may actually be moving to Indiana. I think that could be legit. Yes, there are some bluffs to be called there, but I think it could be legit. In terms of Caleb Williams, has he not proven himself somewhat over the last couple of games? Early on in the season, there were struggles, but he's played really well over the last couple of games, Chris. And I do think you're right in the sense that the Packers' road to victory is to sell out against the run, because how good has Chicago's run game been the last couple of weeks? And Swift is even coming into this one a little banged up. His props are up there. He's questionable on the injury report. I think he plays. But look back to this last game between the Bears and Packers. So the Bears have lost 12 of their last 13 games to the Packers. Like, not a great stat right there. So already the odds are stacked against you if you're Chicago, but you went to Lambeau, you went toe-to-toe with the Packers in the cold elements. And yes, the Bears were bad in the first half, but they came alive in the second half, 244 yards, 18 points in the second half. They reached the red zone on all four of those drives. Like, if you can play two consistent halves of that type of football, without Micah Parsons, without Evan Williams, and potentially top receivers or top offensive weapons in, is Christian Watson going to be playing? You're already without Tucker Kraft. Josh Jacobs is banged up here. So it's partly like a little bit of homery for me. Bears fan, lives in Chicago, wants to see the Bears win. I will fully raise my hand and admit that that is part of this handicap right here. But also, I think it's like, how do the Packers respond without Micah Parsons? Is it deflating coming off of that loss to the Broncos and losing your best defensive player? Or is it a motivating factor of, we all need to play a little bit harder? That's what I am going to be interested in watching on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think, look, I was very hesitant to get back on board with the Packers for a while, right? Because they had the doldrums in the middle of the season, other than a really impressive second half win over the Steelers at Heinz Field. The Packers had a lot of questions being asked about them in the middle of the season, rightfully so, because they were inconsistent. I think I'm back in on the Packers now, though. They have played consistently well, and I get the Denver loss. Denver might actually be a really good team. I'm still not willing to be all in on that, but Denver might be a really good team because I kept questioning the schedule and the schedule and the schedule, and then the Packers come in and they win. But that is a loss on the road in Denver for Green Bay. So I don't necessarily walk away from it going, yeah, ugly loss to Denver. No, it wasn't an ugly loss. It was a tight game. It was on the road. So I look at the Packers as a team that I'm ready to believe in again. The win on Thanksgiving in Detroit, the win over the Bears the week after that at Lambeau. I think they are back on track. And I think you've started to see, you know, maybe we start to see Matthew Golden come to life. We've been waiting how long for that? And I think Rashawn Gary has the opportunity to become the game wrecker now. I think that's the interesting part of a defense when they lose their superstar edge rusher is how does everybody else step up? Or do they, like you said, do they shrink in the moment? I think Rashawn Gary has an opportunity to step up. I think Green Bay has to, and again, it's a schematic thing. I think they have to sell out to stop the run. Do so early and often. Stack the box. Make Caleb Williams make accurate throws. We know how inconsistent he can be in that regard. And so if I'm Green Bay, I do everything I can to put the game on Caleb Williams' right arm. And look, it's only a point and a half. Money line is plus 105, Green Bay, minus 125, Chicago. It's basically a pick 'em. I don't understand, though, why there are a couple points coming in on Green Bay, other than the fact that the Parsons effect, right? And the fact that it's on the road at Soldier Field. I like Green Bay in this spot tomorrow night to take control back of the NFC North from the Bears if they put everything on Caleb's shoulders, if they force him to make good throws on the move consistently, drive after drive.
Yeah, I mean, the line flipped from Packers minus 1.5 to plus 1.5, and I think that was mainly because of the Parsons stuff and potentially not having Christian Watson. I mean, Watson's not moving a line, but Parsons certainly is. My concern for the Packers defense is the points that they're giving up on the road already, and then you lose Micah Parsons. 25.5 points per game allowed on the road compared to only 14.5 at home. And like Rashawn Gary, you have to bring his name up, and he's been great this year, but has he benefited more from Micah Parsons being on the other side? Like don't get me wrong, Rashawn Gary was a great player for the Packers before Parsons got there, but Gary has come alive even more so this season because Parsons attracts so much attention, it leaves a softer matchup on the other side for Rashawn Gary. That's not going to be the case here without Parsons in. So that's any sort of negating argument I have to yours, Chris, on the defense and Rashawn Gary coming alive. It's a coin flip game. That's what the line's telling us. It's been a long time since these games have been coin flip games for Chicago. Yeah. Which, again, Bears have lost 12 of their last 13 games against the Packers. These games are usually not close. These lines are usually not close. So I am probably not the person, candidly, to listen to in this game because I'm all in on the Bears because I want to see a Bears win. I want to see this city come alive even more so than it has already this season and the Bears have success. But I can make some arguments in terms of tangible statistic points in favor of Chicago in this game.
Well, and you don't have to go back much farther than last week's game where Jordan Love turned the ball over a couple of times, right? The Bears have forced turnovers better than anyone else in the league this year. They will force you into mistakes. And if Jordan Love makes those mistakes, then the Bears get short fields. Okay, you're not asking for perfection from Caleb Williams then. You don't. Right. You neutralize the effect of the Packers defense trying to put everything on Caleb. And that is still a possibility that exists. When Love does not play well, the Packers are a mess. And that part can't be ignored. So, conversely, as much as I'm talking about the Packers trying to put the game on Caleb Williams' shoulders, you got to think the Bears defense is doing everything they can to get in Jordan Love's face, force him to make the mistakes that could flip the game their way. Like you said, could light up the atmosphere at Soldier Field, which I'm sure will already be insane. It's at 7:20 kick Central Time in Chicago tomorrow night. It's the first time in a long time that this game has meant anything to both of these teams. So I'm sure it's going to be crazy. You said earlier, and I want to get back to this for just a second before we get to Philly, Washington, because Philly's got a chance to lock up the NFC East tomorrow afternoon. But you said earlier, you think it is a real possibility the Bears move to Indiana. And for those not familiar with the story, there's been a lot of political maneuvering between the city of Chicago, the Illinois state legislature, and the Bears about getting a new stadium. Soldier Field is just outdated and small. There's not the real estate in the city available. They talked about moving to Arlington Heights. I've been talking about that forever. And now all of a sudden, here comes Northwest Indiana, Hammond and Gary, Indiana, which are only about an hour and 15 minutes south of Chicago. Do you think that's a real possibility? Do you think J.B. Pritzker and the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago call the Bears bluff?
I think they should. I'm not sure they do. I mean, they've made it so hard to get this far within negotiations, even to Arlington Heights. And that's more of a Pritzker problem than it is like the city of Chicago. That's more of a state deal because they're not, it sounds like they're not willing to work with the Bears in terms of all the infrastructure around the stadium that they would need the state's help in order to build. Like that's the biggest right. issue here. And then the, not even the tax break, but just having the stable, tax number that they want to know, the Bears want to know that they're going to have going forward. And that's not something that the state's willing to negotiate or deal with them on. So Indiana from like, you know, this news broke 24 hours ago, like they seem all in. And why would they not be all in? You're bringing in $1 billion, multi-billion-dollar organization that's going to make your city bring in jobs, a ton of money. Like it, I don't want the Bears to move to Indiana. It just seems weird. I know that there are other teams, the Jets, the Giants, they play in New Jersey, but like, it's got to be in Illinois. It's got to be a Chicago area, which is where Arlington Heights would be. But there are a lot of roadblocks here. And the fact that it's taken this long, like Kevin Warren was brought over here to essentially build a new stadium. And it's like every 4, 5, 6 months, there's a new plan coming out. And I'm not sure that either side is really willing to work with the other right now. And so you bring in a third party in Indiana and all of a sudden that party's like, yeah, we're on board with whatever you want. Let's do it. I don't know.
It's going to be something to watch. The Indiana Bears. And again,
we're
not going to change the name. We're joking about that part, right, but right. The idea that they would be playing in the state of Indiana, again, for those not familiar with the geography, only about an hour and 15 minutes south of downtown Chicago.
Fairly close.
It would be the equivalent of like the Giants and Jets playing in New Jersey. It's not all that dissimilar. It's something to keep an eye on, though, as the Bears have breathed new life into their fan base with them sitting as the number two seed in the NFC right now. All of a sudden, maybe a little bit more leverage gained in certain areas. In Philly, they actually play in Philly. They don't just play in Philly. They play in South Philly. God bless you. Say a prayer if you're a visiting fan going into the link. They're laying 7 against the Commanders. This one kicks off at 5 Eastern tomorrow afternoon, Kate. Philly is basically locked into the 3 seed. There's a 78% probability that they will be the 3 seed in the NFC, and they can actually clinch the East with a win or a Dallas loss this weekend. The problem is they still have not figured out the offense. You can hang 31 on the Raiders. That doesn't mean jack to me. They have scored more than 19 against a team that currently has a winning record just once this year, and it was way back in week 3 against the Rams. So, I'm not laying 7 against Washington just because I don't trust that the Eagles can score enough to cover that without the risk of a backdoor cover. Mm-hmm. I do think Philly wins and essentially locks up the East in the 3 seed, though.
If you grab this early on when it opened at 5.5, I think that's the perfect number.
Good job.
I'm not laying it at 7. I'm not backing Washington at 7. This is just then a stay away game from me because the Eagles have been so inconsistent. I want them to show me that they are back-ish. I mean, that's air quotes back from their 3-game skid. Like, I want them to show me that their offense is continuing to move in a positive direction, and albeit against poor teams, but There are way more other games that, one, are more interesting to me, and two, I think have more value than to try and force anything in Philly and Washington. Washington may be feeling themselves a little bit coming off the win last week. Granted, that was against the Giants, but they did snap, what, their 8-game losing streak. I'm off this game completely, Chris. 5.5 was the right number. 7, stay away from me.
44.5 is interesting on the total. A little wiggle room there maybe for an under, I think. Might be worth a look. Again, it kicks off 5 Eastern tomorrow as it's a weekend full of football. And we got you covered for all of it here on Bet Sweats alongside Kate Constable. I'm Chris Mack. Coming up with 5 of the 7 early window games involving eliminated teams. Is it time to embrace the suck? Especially for one team looking to avoid a massive collapse atop their division. That's next. Time to embrace the suck with the early Sunday afternoon window in the NFL. We get into that, especially for one team who is in a world of trouble after a strong start to the season. And in 20 minutes, one team could see their playoff chances nearly vanish if they can't win at home against an old rival. On Sunday afternoon, we'll get into that as well. Welcome back into Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network alongside Kate Constable. I'm Chris Mack. I mentioned it, Kate, 5 of the 7 games being played in the 1 Eastern window on Sunday afternoon involve teams that are eliminated. 4 of them have eliminated teams playing each other. So other than draft positioning, the games in New Orleans between the Saints and the Jets, in Tennessee, between the Titans and the Chiefs, in the Meadowlands, between the Giants and the Vikings, and in Miami, between the Bengals and the Dolphins. All 4 of those games mean nothing. So I don't know. I think you're on mute still. But I don't know if any of those games have any kind of interest level from you whatsoever. I don't. Maybe the Chiefs, because, well, it's the Chiefs, and you want to see just how bad it gets without Mahomes.
That would be one that I would at least like check the score to. It won't be taking over the big main TV. That's for sure. I wonder if the Chiefs like just totally crumble here. What is there left to play for? Your quarterback, your Patrick Mahomes. We'll just go first name, full name basis. Not even your quarterback. It just Patrick Mahomes is out for the year. A massive blow. You're on the road now against a really bad team. Like, how excited can the Chiefs really be to be playing this weekend?
Well, I also think, you know, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, right, and you're their general manager, Brett Veach, and you are looking at maybe not a rebuild. It's not a rebuild, but, you know, sort of a soft reset on the fly. Very difficult to do when you're a championship caliber team year after year after year. But you've got an opportunity to maybe end up with a top 10 pick in this coming year's draft. I mean, I wouldn't be going out of my way to win these games. If I'm Brett Veach, I walk down to Andy Reid's office and say, hey, Andy, listen, we're out of it. Let's improve our position in the draft. I'm not telling you to tank, wink, wink, but I'm not telling you to sell out to win these games either.
Let's play some of our younger guys. Get them some experience, right? Some of our rookies this year, second-year players that don't get a whole lot of run, that are deep into the depth chart. That's kind of maybe what we see from the Chiefs in this one. The other one that like doesn't mean a whole lot to one of these teams, which is the Browns, but I'm interested to see how the Bills play, how Josh Allen continues to stack good games. Yeah. And because I think this is a team that early on in the season – they looked like they had a lot of issues and things were not clicking there. And maybe this wasn't going to be the year for the Bills and Josh Allen, despite the path maybe being a little bit easier, but they've turned things around. So 10.5 is a big number on the road in Cleveland against that defense. But I'm more so just interested to see what the Bills can show me, if they can show me anything more in terms of their defense improving, one. And the offense being more consistent like it has been the past couple games.
Well, and they've still got an opportunity to catch the Patriots for the division title too.
Yep.
And we'll get into the Patriots Ravens game probably in a little more than a half hour or so, right at the top of the hour here on Bet Sweats. But Buffalo, We talked earlier about Seattle and LA after last night's game and whether anybody in the NFC side of the field can beat either one of those two teams, and how there's not really a standout team in the AFC. Record-wise, sure, Denver, New England. But you look around and you don't look at the AFC, potential AFC playoff field and go, ooh, you have to get past that team. Like you said, there just isn't that team. The closest thing to it, though, is Buffalo. Like, that's the team that if they somehow catch the Patriots for the AFC East and you've got to go to Buffalo and win a playoff game, I don't care who you are, I'm not feeling very excited about that. Or worse yet, Buffalo ends up the 5 seed and you're the 4 seed division champ and you got the Bills coming to your house for wild card weekend. Like, nobody's excited about playing the Bills in the playoffs.
Because of all the teams left in the AFC, the Bills have the most playoff experience. They have the most big game experience, right? Like, their record, maybe 10-4, isn't quite 12-2 where Denver is. But I would take the Bills and just the experience that Josh Allen has in these big time games and moments. And you think about the teams he's beaten in the playoffs to get to the AFC championship game before. I know he hasn't gotten over that hump, but I would be much more confident in that quarterback and even head coach duo with McDermott. Like, not something I think too many people would say, but just because of the playoff experience that they have over, I mean, I guess Vrabel has a ton of experience too, but like with his quarterback, this is the first year with that quarterback that he has.
I think it's taken for granted. And as much as I was out on the Patriots all summer long, and now I have to eat crow in that regard, and I'm fine with that. That's fine. I still think, and I'm still going to stand by the fact that I think that part of the Patriots gets overrated. And that part is, oh, well, Vrabel has this wealth of experience. I mean, he played for the Patriots during the Brady Belichick dynasty. Well, this isn't like
Brady's not on the field.
Right. He doesn't just by osmosis give that level of experience to the players. Like, it doesn't happen. He can do his best to educate them about it, what it's going to be like, but they don't just absorb all that information. Like, it doesn't work that way. And so I think that gets overblown in regard to the Patriots and Vrabel's effect on that team and their lack of playoff experience. But yeah, to bring it back to Buffalo, I don't want to play them. I don't care who you are. You don't want to play Buffalo in the playoffs. I don't care how good you feel about your team right now. The NFC side of things, when we talk about a scary matchup, maybe for a 4 seed division winner hosting a really quality 5 seed in the NFC, it's going to be Tampa or Carolina. One of them is going to be the 4 seed, Kate. It just has to happen because that's the rule. I'm sorry. Somebody has to win the division and they'll get a home playoff game. Tampa's favored by 3 Sunday afternoon in Charlotte against the Panthers. The Panthers play much better at home than they have on the road. This is the first, though, of 2 meetings between these two teams in the final 3 weeks that will decide the division. Tampa has been spiraling, right? They've lost 5 out of 6, 6 out of 8. Ugly loss at home to the Falcons last Thursday night. They've had a little extra time to recover from that, though, maybe. And they do have, for the first time all year, an entirely intact receiving core. So you got to embrace the suck, I guess, and the fact that you've got to go to Carolina, and Baker Mayfield's 4-0 against the Panthers since he played for them. You've got to go to Carolina and prove that the 5-1 start wasn't a fluke. Prove that you can survive now that you've bounced back from a lot of those injuries in the receiving core. And I suspect Tampa will do that, but it's time to get up off the mat. Like, it's an 8 count. You got to get your wits about you and get back in the middle of the ring and get going, because the last 2 months have been atrocious for the Bucs.
They really could not have been a whole lot worse for Tampa Bay. Lost 5 of their last 6 games. They're allowing nearly 30 points per game. That's garbage. When I like to back the Panthers, and it's not often, let's be real, I don't like to back the Panthers all that often, but it's when they're at home and they're underdogs. I'm looking, if you made me pick in this game, I'm taking the 3 with the Panthers. Baker's 1-3 in his last 4 road starts. Bryce Young 4-1 at home this season. The defense for Tampa Bay, 30th in passing yards allowed per game, red zone efficiency, almost a 72% touchdown rate. It's gross. Like, everything in me wants to take the Bucs in here, but yeah. I think the right side with the points, with the field goal, is Carolina at home.
You might be talking some sense into me. I just have a hard time seeing Baker Mayfield go into Carolina and not win a game of consequence. And that's what this is.
Exactly. Like, especially with all his weapons back, with Mike Evans back, which, Chris, is another thing. Here's a prop I like this week. Mike Evans, 55.5 receiving yards. That's too low. I know he's coming back from injury. He had 132 yards against the Falcons last week. The Panthers, they gave up 192 to the Saints, 212 to the Rams in the week that they beat the Rams. Like, their defense still is this. Their passing defense still isn't great. Mike Evans, I think, has to have a massive game if Baker's going to have success, if the Bucs are going to have success in this one. So you're getting a discount at 55.5 because he's coming off that injury, but I don't think that matters for old Mike Evans.
Man, you've got me twisted on this one now, because I think all the points you make about Carolina being at home, about the Patriots, or the Patriots, the Buccaneers defense the last few weeks, it all comes together, and I can't see Baker Mayfield going into Charlotte and losing. I can't wrap my brain around that concept. I can't. Maybe the key is to just stay away from the side or the total or anything and focus on the props, like you mentioned. Mike Evans. How about Mike Evans over 4.5 receptions is plus money at BetMGM right now, plus 125.
Sign me up. Mike Evans, anytime touchdown, plus 170.
Yeah.
That's
Tet McMillan over 4.5 catches is about even money as well. Like, if you want to just bet that you might actually get the best of two teams who have not played very well or played very consistently all year, if you want to just bet on the fact that you're actually going to get the ball slung around the yard a little bit, that may be the play or the props. Embrace the suck. Like I said, one of these two teams has to win and somebody has to have the NFC South lead coming out of it.
Well, I think if anything in this game, it's high scoring. It's a shootout. I don't think this is like a defensive game where it's a low scoring type of Cleveland Browns score at the end. I think if anything, it's a shootout. I would trust Baker more so in a shootout. But again, Carolina's 9-1. Against the spread, past 10 games as a home underdog. That's where they thrive. So, Chris, I guess here's another thought is Panthers are plus 330 to win the NFC South right now. If you like the Panthers, do you take them just to win the division and you get a significantly better price? But knowing that these two teams are going to face each other again in week 18. So,
yeah, because I couldn't trust, even if I wanted to trust that Carolina was going to follow all those trends you're talking about, playing at home and the Bucs defense and everything else, even if I trusted that Carolina was going to win this game on Sunday afternoon, there's no way I would trust them to beat the Bucs twice in 3 weeks.
Right.
I just couldn't.
Especially in Tampa Bay in week 18.
Yeah. So I probably wouldn't, but if you do believe in Carolina, then yeah, hell, go that way. That makes a whole lot more sense. I want to touch on one more early window game. Chargers are at the Cowboys, getting 2.5. A Chargers win coupled with a loss by either the Colts or the Texans would clinch them a playoff spot. And look, another put me up on freezing cold takes again. I thought a few weeks ago the Chargers were ripe to be left for dead. I still wonder if they're going to go in to the playoffs, assuming they get in. It's not a large assumption now. They got like a 90% chance to get in even after a loss, I think, this week, if it were to happen. I still wonder what Justin Herbert's going to look like when they get there. Like, he's going to look like one of those old cars that rolls down the highway with like primer on the front fender and it's got a bumper tied on the back and it's just falling to pieces, but it's still getting down the road somehow.
And you're also so pissed at that car because it's blocking traffic and it's not going fast enough because it's falling apart and the road rage comes out. That's how I feel about Justin Herbert and the Chargers in the playoffs. Cause what have we seen from them in the playoffs the last couple, if they get in?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing bad, I should say. Yeah.
Last year, tons of turnovers by Herbert. It's hard to back the Chargers right now with their offensive line, what it is, with Herbert's hand, what it is. And I know he's had a couple good games with that cast on his hand, and it's his non-throwing hand. But the game against, who was it? The Eagles. The Eagles gave that game away. Yep. Like, that was a little bit more of the Eagles sucking than the Chargers being awesome. Yeah, you beat the Chiefs last week. That's a good win in Arrowhead. I'm leaning towards, if this gets to three, I will take the Chargers. Because what are we at right now? 2.5? If this gets to three, I'll take the Chargers. If not, I'm going to be on, I think, the Cowboys.
Well, the Cowboys are playing for their lives. They lose, they're done. They may be done anyway by the time they even take the field for this game if Philly should take care of business against Washington. I think that's something to factor in here, because I do expect the Eagles take care of business against Washington, and that means this could be a meaningless game for the Cowboys. You know somebody I don't trust in a game that means absolutely nothing? George Pickens. Pickens unders. Pickens, I don't care if CD's playing or not. Pickens under 5.5 receptions. Pickens under receiving yards. George Pickens will be checked out. Plus, there's a good chance he's going up against a guy he used to practice against in Pittsburgh, and Dante Jackson, who's having a fantastic year for the Chargers. Get up in his head, say a few things. George takes a personal foul. He checks out. Yes. We're fading Pickens this weekend. Watch, he'll go off for 8 catches, 130, and 2 touchdowns, probably. Speaking of those Steelers, an old foe headed back to a place where maybe he hasn't done as well as you think he has. We get into that next on Bet Sweats. Alongside Kane Constable, I'm Chris Mack. Welcome into Bet Sweats. And a legend is returning to a place he knows very well, with a chance to maybe stay hot and bury a former rival. We'll get into that in just a second as we turn our attention to the late Sunday afternoon NFL window. Top of the hour, we get into the primetime games, recency bias, maybe flipping a line on Sunday night and Monday night, another team with their playoff life essentially on the line. Plus, we still have to talk about those other CFP matchups we didn't get to yet. If you missed it earlier, you can always rewind inside your Odyssey app or download the podcast form of today's show to get our handicap on Bama, Oklahoma tonight, an 8 o'clock kickoff in the first of the 4 first round CFP matchups. But a little trivia for you, Kate. How about this? You ready? Aaron Rodgers has started 13 games at Ford Field, many of them against very bad Detroit Lions teams when he was a member of very good Green Bay Packer teams. So of 13 starts at Ford Field, how many do you think Aaron Rodgers has won?
14 starts. I'm going to go
13. Magic number. 13
starts. I'm going to go 12.
Eight. He's 8-5 at Ford Field, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we all get caught up in the mystique of the Motor City Miracle, the Hail Mary and all that. And we just think, oh, Rodgers probably never lost in Detroit because the Lions sucked forever and Rodgers was great. He's actually lost there 5 times, which was more than I expected.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Lions sucked all those years when Rodgers was with the Packers. Rodgers probably lit it up there. He also, didn't he lose there his final game of his Packer career?
Yes. Yeah.
One of those
lost his last two there, I think, or two of his last three there as Packers quarterback. He hasn't been back there though. Jets did not go to Detroit with Rodgers as quarterback. The Steelers go there Sunday afternoon, 7-point dogs, and their playoff chances take a massive swing. NFL.com ranks each game this late in the season based on leverage. This game, I think, has the largest leverage number of any game on the board because of how it wildly swings each team's playoff chances based on their win or loss. For example, Detroit with a win has a 44% chance to make the playoffs. With a loss, drops all the way under 20% to 19. Steelers with a win shoot all the way up to 77% chance to make the playoffs, pending whatever Baltimore does Sunday night against the Patriots. A Steelers loss drops their playoff chances to essentially 50-50. So no TJ Watt, No Nick Herbig, who is the primary backup on the edge for the Steelers. It'll be Alex Highsmith, who has played very well the last few weeks, and rookie Jack Sawyer getting the start on the edges for the Steelers against a Lions offense that I would have to think, Kate, just wants to shove the ball down the Steelers' poor run defense's throat with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And that's where I think the edge has to be. It's why Detroit's favored by 7, because the Steelers still haven't proven it. A couple of nice wins in a row on the road at Baltimore, and they handled business against a bad Miami team in the cold, Tua playing worse than he's ever played before, probably. But now they've got to go on the road against the Lions team, who, yes, is dealing with a ton of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, but has one of the best run games in the league.
I wonder if we're overvaluing, and I guess maybe this line is saying we're not overvaluing the Steelers, but overvaluing them a little bit based on the last two wins. Good win against Buffalo. I like the win against Miami, you said it. That doesn't do anything for me. Tua's god-awful in the cold. That whole team played terrible. I think like this is a motivation spot for both sides because of the playoff implications. But like, if there's sure. any team where motivation is something that I would actually factor like heavily into a handicap, it has to be with the Lions, because Dan Campbell is the ultimate motivator. And I think you said it, like the Lions will try and just run it down Pittsburgh's throat. And when you have a player like Jahmyr Gibbs and even David Montgomery, whose role has been significantly reduced this year, like he can go off at any time. I think we could get a big Amon-Ra St. Brown game in this one as well. So the Lions' secondary issues are a concern, and you certainly saw that against the Rams. But also, we've been talking about how good are the Rams. They could be a Super Bowl fate. I mean, they are my pick to go to the Super Bowl. They're the team that you have to get past in the NFC. Like, for the most part, the Lions stuck with the Rams for, what, three quarters of that game, and then it kind of got out of hand. So
yeah.
Seven, a touchdown is a lot, but they are at home. Backs against the wall. I would lay it with Detroit.
I don't know if I'd lay the 7 points if I were betting this game, because what we've seen over the last few weeks is that, and this, look, I said earlier, there's not a single team in the AFC playoff field, aside from maybe Buffalo, that you look at and say, oh, we got to get through them. The Steelers are not that team either. I'm going to be clear about this. I'm not being a Steelers homer here when I say, though, that Aaron Rodgers starting to come to life makes this team completely different. And the last two games, Aaron Rodgers may not have looked like peak MVP level Aaron Rodgers, but he's looked a whole hell of a lot better than he did that month around the hand injury, the wrist injury, that he's playing through fairly well now. He has looked really good, making reads at the line, doing typical Rodgers things, making adjustments. I don't want to say calling the offense on the field, but taking what Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, gives him and making the most out of it. They've seen Kenneth Gainwell actually have a really interesting resurgence as well, with Jaylen Warren dinged up. I hate to oversimplify. I said this earlier when we talked about Oklahoma, Alabama. I hate to oversimplify and put everything on just one or two players, especially when they're quarterbacks, because that's low-hanging fruit. But if Rodgers has a really good game on Sunday, I think there's a shot at the outright upset at plus 260. But you've got to bank on Rodgers having on continuing what he's done the last 2 weeks. And it's kind of a show-me spot in that regard. I got to see Rodgers do it again before I start to believe that the Steelers may actually be able to make some noise in the playoffs.
That would be my only concern, is like, yeah, you got to give Aaron Rodgers credit with the way he's played the last couple of weeks, but two games out of how many, like you said, he's just starting to come alive. He hasn't played that well all season. Like, this isn't a season-long trend where Rodgers has been phenomenal. It's been a two-game stretch. Can that continue? Yeah, it certainly can. Aaron Rodgers has shown that before, but I can't bet on Aaron Rodgers being great again in this spot on the road against a desperate Lions team when inconsistent. Can you say that? Like, he's had some good games this year. There's some positives to take away, but his two best games have been his last two games. Is that momentum going to continue? That's my question. I'm not sold that it does.
Yeah, that's the thing. I haven't seen Rodgers string together three really good games yet this year. You can maybe
how many years too, Chris? Like,
yeah, and I mean, that's a really valid point too. Not just in the vacuum or the silo of this season in particular, but really since his next to last year in Green Bay, yeah, we haven't seen Rodgers at his peak. I mean, we're talking about 4 years now removed from the best of Aaron Rodgers. That's not saying he can't find it again for a couple weeks at a time, and maybe that continues this week, but it would be the first time since Green Bay we've seen Rodgers string together at least three really good games in a row. And that's probably, I think, the only avenue to the Steelers pulling off the outright upset. The 7 is an interesting number. Again, I don't think I'd take either side if I was going to bet this game at all. I'd probably just roll a little bit on the Steelers' money line in case Rodgers did play well. Massive game as far as AFC playoff seeding goes in Denver. Denver can clinch the AFC West with a win and a Chargers loss. They can clinch the one seed overall with a win, that Chargers loss to Dallas possibly, as well as Buffalo and New England losses. Now, I don't see that happening. I don't think anybody sees Buffalo going to Cleveland and losing, but it's on the table at the very least due to their big win over the Packers last week. Whereas Jacksonville is still in a battle for the AFC South title with the surging Houston Texans. Jags are getting a field goal going to Denver. This is one of those games. You know, if the Steelers game in Detroit is where the Steelers get to prove whether they actually belong in the conversation in the AFC playoffs to win a game or two, this is a spot where the Jags get to prove that they're actually as good as their record indicates on the road at Denver.
And I'm not sure that's the case, Chris. Yes, Jacksonville has won 5 straight games. Trevor Lawrence has looked awesome in those games, leads the NFL in yards per attempt, passing touchdowns. He has 13 passing touchdowns over that 5-game win streak. But I think you have to take into account who those touchdowns have come against, who they've played. They played the Chargers. That's a solid win. You crushed the Chargers, but you played the Cardinals that went to overtime, the Titans, the Colts in their downfall, and the Jets. 5 of those 13 touchdowns from Lawrence came last week against the Jets. Granted, 4 passing, 1 rushing, or maybe there were 6 and whatever.
I think it was either 6. Way. I think it was 4 and 2, but yeah.
Okay. This defense for the Broncos, significantly better than anything that the Jags have faced over the last 5 weeks. 58 sacks on the season. That leads the league. The Broncos are 7-0 straight up at home. I know you're asking them to cover a field goal, but I certainly think that's in play. I mean, that Mile High Stadium, what's that stadium called? Is that what it's called?
Something at Mile High now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever it is, Denver is a tough place. That's a tough environment to play in. I'm not sold on Jacksonville being the team that they have shown us they are the last 5 weeks against mediocre opponents.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'd lay the 3 with Denver. I keep waiting for the bottom to drop out on the Broncos, but after last week, I think I can put that away. I think I can just own the fact that, they've had a soft schedule, but they may actually be good. And it could be both things. Both may be true. They may have had a very soft schedule up to this point, but they may also just be really, really good. And again, it's a long shot this weekend, but they've still got a chance to lock up that one seed in the AFC. Speaking of the AFC South, we will touch briefly on that as the Texans host the Raiders, a 2-touchdown spread. Plus, I think recency bias is completely overblowing the line in one primetime game in week 16. We'll get into that one next here on BetSweats on the BetMGM Network.